Hello, everyone. Welcome to a brand spanking new, exciting episode of Not Aspirational with Hannah Brown. I'm your host, Hannah Brown, and welcome back, everyone. I hope you all are having a great week so far. I'm super excited about today's guest. Before we get into the episode, if you don't follow me already, follow me at Hannah A. Brown on Instagram and Twitter. And also, if you're liking the show, please do me the favor of heading on over to iTunes and leaving a rating and a review. I really, really appreciate it. It makes the show easier to find. It grows the audience. So leave a review if you're liking it. Also, if you can't get enough of me, head on over to patreon.com/notaspirational. And for just $5 a month, you get access to all the bonus episodes. Right now, I'm recapping season 2 of Roni. I also randomly did an episode about Xenon Girl of the 21st Century just because I fucking felt like it. So make sure to check it out. Today, I am joined by meme maker, genius extraordinaire, and host of the Hit Bravo podcast, Mixing with Mani. We have Mani on the podcast today. We had such a great time. Mani is so funny, so insightful, and we had an awesome conversation about Real Housewives of Potomac. Mani gave her takes on how Bravo can keep things fresh and fun on the shows. She also talked about her own personal experiences with racism growing up, as well as gave tips as to how non-Black people can show up as allies. And she also had one of my literal all-time favorite answers to the question, what is something aspirational that you don't have yet, but you want? And we truly just had such a great time. So I know y'all are going to love her. I know y'all are going to love this episode. I'm going to stop talking now. Without further ado, let's get into it. This is my conversation with Mani. Mani, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for your time. I'm thrilled to be chatting with you today, especially because Real Housewives of Potomac just aired the premiere, and like you basically are the mayor of Potomac at this point.
Oh my gosh. That is the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me. Listen, I think it's a group effort. We're all trying to do our best to get people to watch TV and watch the things we love. And it just so happens that I apparently am the person who's trying to get a lot of people. I don't know how, other than me being abrasive and overzealous and being like, you will watch this show and you will love this show. But it's a cause that I'm really happy that I got behind. You know, I think it was important work. I hope anyone who hears me taking myself too seriously knows that I am literally being facetious. But I do think it's a very important job that we put, you know, we project onto people the shows we know that they should love because we love it. And that's me with Potomac.
Yes, truly. Like, you got me, you got Jake into Potomac, countless others. And also you gave me like a kick in the pants when I needed it. Cause I was like, Mani, I'm like halfway through season 2. And then I kind of stopped for a while and you were like, don't be lazy. Like, you have to get caught up. And truly after that, I was like, all right, I'm in. And then I couldn't stop.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things where it's like, and I don't want to make people feel bad about themselves, but we have sat through so many shit seasons.
Yes.
So many of these shows.
Yes.
If one or two first two seasons of a show did not bring you in, you have to just have faith. Because when has Bravo ever truly, truly let us down with a cast and with a show when they really put the effort into it, you know?
Yes.
Especially with the Housewives franchise. Think of season 1 of Miami. Now we have people who are constantly begging for Miami to be brought back. You see how that works? I guess
Yes. We
did not like it. And now we're like, oh my God, where is it?
Well, see, I feel like, honestly, like, I've been questioning my own Bravo fandom recently because I do feel like I've fallen off or not even gotten into like certain Bravo shows. And I'm also having an existential crisis because I'm like, Bravo isn't really gripping me anymore the way it used to, which is kind of terrifying. But Potomac is the one Bravo show that like it takes me on a beautiful ride every single episode. Like, even Roni, I'm like, I don't really care.
I think my theory is, well, I don't think this is my theory. My theory is that it's because we don't know them. We are not yet fully disappointed by them yet. And I think the same thing happened with the excitement of Dallas. And I remember before this past season, which really did let me down in a lot of ways. And that way is gone now. But still, you know, how it let it got this far, we don't know. But what I realized was, and I was super big caping for that show too, we didn't know them. They're new people. And the problem is with all these other shows, I think beyond Dallas and Potomac, the youngest of those shows, I believe, is Atlanta, and that, or it's Beverly Hills. And mm-hmm. Beverly Hills is currently on season 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. So we're now entering the double digits for all of these shows, with the exception of Dallas and Potomac. And they are toddlers in this game. Like, they're so small. And totally. That's kind of the point, right? We don't know anything about them. The cast is still a little hit or miss. They're still trying to mesh. Potomac, however, does a really good job, because they've all pretty much stayed consistent since season 2 and 3. Candace is like the most recent addition before this year, where they decided to get, you know, Dr. Wendy, a newcomer who's brought in by a new girl. This also doesn't happen that often. But the thing is, their OGs are not much older than the people who have been on there. Like, it's hard to imagine Potomac pre-Monique, but like, right. It kind of doesn't exist, but then it does because they're so new. So with that, it's really easy for us to fall in love with these characters because they're so new to us. We're literally learning their kids, their homes, their style, everything right now. So it feels refreshing.
That's so true, because that's, yes, I think, like, especially with New York, and, you know, like, I know a lot of people really love New York, but for me, it's just been like an eye roll after another on my end, because I'm like, okay, great. So like, everyone's sloppy and wasted again. And that's like, no shade to people who want to get sloppy and wasted. It's just when we see it week after week after week, and it just
season after season.
It's just kind of like, I'm so bored. Whereas Potomac, there's just like you said, like a freshness to it. I can truly put my phone down and just like disappear into the TV. And that's what I want out of my television.
Yeah. And I mean, think about it. New York has had, we know their potential. We know Scary mm-hmm. Island is the thing, you know, mm-hmm. we know that that is where we can go. We know Cartagena, we know that boat ride, like we know the Berserkers. So really them getting like knocked down, drag out into a fight and sloppy drunk, it's not new to us. So it feels redundant right. to us. We right. know that they can do this. We've seen it. And there's a lot of room for disappointment because we know what they can do. Potomac, this year, we see them teasing this knockdown, drag out fight between Candace and Monique, who were once friends. So now people are going back. Like, what happened? How did we get here? We don't know their potential. We have no idea how far they can go. And so for us, it's exciting. And that's great. It's one of the reasons why I keep telling my listeners and my followers, I think that we really need to, and this is the people are going to come after you, Hannah. I'm sorry. I can't be responsible for what I said. I should be, but I can't be. I think we need to refresh cast every few years. I don't think there should be an OG. I don't think OG should be a thing. I think we should kind of, and I don't even think it should just be one revolving door, because you're going to constantly have a situation like OC where everyone's been there multiple years, and then you have a Bronwyn come in, and then you're like, why doesn't she mesh with the group? Because they've known each other for years.
Right.
Like, obviously, she won't mesh with them. She's trying to come into, like, think back to high school. You try to go and talk to that one, you know, or you're the new girl talking to this whole new group. Or you're the group and this new girl's like, hi, I'm going to end up being your best friend. You're like, okay, can we like get to know you first, girl?
Right.
Calm down.
Right. Like, it's an immediate turnoff. Yes.
Exactly. So I think we need to get rid of the idea that like Ramona and me and Teresa, they're going to get desperate. Why wouldn't they? These new young people are coming on their show acting like they quote unquote own the place, when essentially they do. It is an ensemble cast.
Right.
And they feel threatened. The most threatened I've ever seen a housewife in my life is Ramona currently with Leah. It's so obvious and blatant that it's
annoying. My God.
And it's like insulting to me. But that's kind of the point. You let these women get too comfortable and they're going to get desperate, and then it's hard for us to watch.
Yeah. I mean, that's what was like, that's the whole thing with like Vanderpump Rules, which, you know, I'm at a point where like, I don't want to watch that show again. But it, you know, to your point of OGs getting too comfortable, it's like, that's how like the Jaxes are born, where it's like, they think that their shit doesn't stink and that they can do whatever the fuck they want because they think that it's their show at that point. And it does get redundant, because then even when you do bring new people into the fold, you just see the OGs sort of gang up on them, or one mm-hmm. person will embrace the new person and then the whole group turns on them. And it's just, it's a very predictable dynamic. And so while your take is a hot take, I actually would love to see just fully refreshed casts. Because I'm like, am I no longer a Bravo person? Like, I truly am like, I don't care. I can't, I have nothing to say. Like, I'm questioning who I am.
Because it feels like the idea, I think people think that when people call out all of these shows and these women for the problematic things they say or do, they think it means that we don't want to see different perspectives on a show. First and foremost, I would love to see people who especially explicitly don't really mesh with me because of the color of my skin or my gender or whatever. Mm-hmm. I would like to see them up front. I need to know who you are before I stand you, okay?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be disappointed. So I'm fine with us having different perspectives because I love to know who hates me up front, you know?
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's like, I think you can find the same thing and still refresh those cats. I think that you are going to get disappointed because people on or New York or New Jersey, those cats, it's not a sign that everyone has to be under 35. It's a sign that obviously New York and New Jersey and those cats are going to step up to what we already knew about them. Even OC, Vicky, they come from a different realm of thinking and acting, even a different realm of reality TV because it was different when they got started.
Right.
So this new realm that Bravo is trying to open up the, you know, the viewership, they want to open up that ratings block and make it a little bit younger.
Mm-hmm.
18 and 19 and 20 year olds are not going to go watch a 70 or 63 year old woman belittle a younger woman because, and a single mom at that, because she has bipolar.
Right.
Because she's suffering with mental health. There is not a lot of 18 year olds who don't already get it. Like, you know what I mean? They don't have to really get behind a hashtag or something. To them, it's like, duh, like they already kind of live this way because they're practically the kids of millennials who kind of really pushed things into the forefront of social media and social activism and that kind of change. So really, it's hard for them to watch because A, it's their parents, it's their grandparents, and they're like, we don't want that. But the difference is, it's not that you can make a show for younger people, but Bravo is the one who keeps trying to make these ratings blocks happen. So they're adding Aaliyah to a Dorinda, Luann, Sonia, Ramona cast.
Right.
And we saw how that worked with Tinsley. It wasn't well. Like, I like Tinsley, but it didn't go great.
No, I totally agree. And I do feel like, you know, I think back to when I first started watching Bravo, I was probably like 16, 17, 18 years old. And I remember on like Roni, I loved Bethany because I was like, oh, she's like cool and like young and like closer to my age. And like, I wanted to see her succeed. But I feel like now, yeah, it is, it's just such a weird dynamic having someone who's literally like, yeah, like 35 years old, you know, getting yelled at by a 63 year old woman. Like, it doesn't add up to me. It needs to be a separate show.
Or it needs to be better integrated. You can't just do these one-offs. Like if it was, I get that they want to avoid a whole like us versus them thing. Cause I remember Atlanta used to have like the talls versus the smalls, but also that dynamic kind of helps when you have side conversations. There's two sets of filming. There isn't that one person that doesn't want to film with the whole group. So no one's going to film with them. So then they're on, but they're not on. It kind of does help in that regard. But otherwise, it really does feel like an us versus them because you have this one person and this group of other people who are 20, 30 years older than them. They're not going to mesh right away. That's not always going to happen. I mean, Leah has a complicated relationship with her own mother. So someone in that age group is going to come at some kind of like a volatile discussion to her. Of course, someone is going to be a trigger for her. That's practically her mother's age. And it's like a sign that something is wrong within that dynamic. But like, do we all, can we still have a show that meshes the two groups? Absolutely. It just can't be one at a time. I don't think that works.
Yes. That's such a good point. Also, I never even considered that like Leah could easily get triggered by Ramona because she has her issues with her own mom. That's such a good point.
Oh, I felt that right away.
You clocked it.
Didn't like her or something.
Yeah.
Like because sister was like, you know, mom like, doesn't like you. And I was like, that's rude.
Right. And also it's like, what, like, I don't know. I mean, obviously, I feel like Lisa Rinna, especially these days, like, I'll do anything for a buck. But the thought of, like, having to party with, like, you know, women much older than me, like, day in and day out, who just clearly don't like me because I'm younger than them. Like, what a crazy thing to go through. Like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yep. I don't know how Leah does it. It's maddening to watch.
I don't know how she does it either. But that also, this is not me empathizing with Ramona Singer, but I also understand Ramona's feeling threatened because this is her source of income. And that's the thing. A lot of these women don't feel like they have to earn their check. That's just the truth. See, they don't think they have to perform. Mm-hmm. Like Nene is like a prime example of this. She has put in so much work on Atlanta, where so much, at least for, especially in the Black community, so much of Bravo we associate with NeNe Leakes. When a lot of my friends, and this is at least for my friend group, and it, unless you're an explicit Bravo-holic, they're not watching the other franchises because, well, lack of representation for one. A lot of times things can be very triggering. I mean, they try to get into New York. All of a sudden, Luann's there with really bronze skin and a large afro.
Right.
And now
right.
they don't want to watch. It's like, we get alienated very quickly. And it's hard for us sometimes to feel included in these groups. I mean, look at Dallas. You know, you get Carrie on there. People want to watch. And all of a sudden, she's being treated with racism. Like,
right.
5 minutes. And you're like, well, why did I come here? Right.
Totally.
So we associate NeNe with Bravo in a lot of spaces. And at the very least, if you are a Bravo-holic and you know, you still know NeNe is an entity on Bravo. She has delivered some of the biggest memes, gifts, and one-liners I've ever seen. There's no more marketable person than NeNe.
Right.
But we saw this past season, she went on this apology tour, and it seems like in real life now, it didn't even work because she's still like not, she might not even be on the show because she does not feel like she has to earn that check. She gets to be withdrawn because we get other young, and then other young people come, or other new people, not even just young people, new people come who are like, oh, you're going to give me how much to show my real life? Yeah, I'll mention it all. Like, you got a NeNe or Ramona who's like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to film that. I don't want to show this. You had
Teresa
asking last season, please don't air this. It's to the point where it makes you feel like, well, maybe I don't want to be involved then. And people get very visceral to them. But these other new people are like, I'll show it all for $100,000. I'll totally. Give you anything.
These messy newcomers like truly don't care. Whereas I feel like the OGs are like, I'm an icon. Like I do what I want.
Vicky, she thought that she could just show up as a friend of the everything and be in every single scene. Bronwyn comes in with 7 kids. There's queerness involved. She has open relationships with other people. There's
threesomes.
There's a little bit of swinging. She's allowed to kiss Tamara. Her husband's very progressive. He's somehow being able to provide for 7 people, 8 people, 9 people. She looks like a freaking 21-year-old swimsuit model.
Right.
And had all these kids. And one of the kids, she was so young, she could have a party for being not breastfeeding anymore. Like,
right.
And Vicky wants to be able to say she doesn't want this, that, and the third, and I'm going to buy my own ring and do all these things. And then you have a Bronwyn that comes in and like, well, I'll show you whatever you want. But
right.
hello, they're going to gravitate towards one over the other because one gives them more potential ratings for longer features. If it were up to me, and this is like the longest tangent ever that has nothing to do with the topic, but if it were up to me,
this.
Everyone would have expiration contracts and then it would be per review. I think that if you love someone like a Ramona or a Teresa or even a Vicky, when you realize you want to bring in new people, let them know, please, that you want that. Let them know that you are going. I don't see anything wrong with being forthcoming. I get that the whole idea of production and reality TV is to kind of catch them off guard. But if you tell someone like Vicky that you're bringing in a Bronwyn, you're going to get the same reaction from Vicky. She's going to be pissed because she knows what the actual reasoning is for you to have her on there. You know what I mean?
Right.
And Vicky realized that when she got demoted, what Bronwyn's job was, and that was to replace Vicky. And then once Vicky had known that up front, she would have fought harder to keep her spot. And even if it didn't work, I would let them know, listen, you got 3 years, we're going in a different direction.
Right.
You don't even know if we're going to have 3 seasons. So you got 3 seasons, we're going in a different direction. And then offer them a way to tell their story and end it. Or, like allegedly they offered Tamara, or they can go in peace and not have anything to do with the show. But if you want Housewives to continue, there has to be a recharge and people need to feel refreshed. We need to see that there's something that hasn't been done before on this particular city or franchise. Or, I don't know, Bravo, add new cities.
Yes, I know. I'm so excited for Real Housewives of Salt Lake.
I am trying to get excited for Real Housewives of Salt Lake.
I'm cautiously optimistic.
I'm doing my best.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if I'm optimistic. I'm just not actively pessimistic.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. Also, I want to thank you because you got me into the show. What's it called? So Cosmo. on E.
Oh yes, So Cosmo. And I, this is one of the things that I needed a podcast for. I like to point out random things that no one cares about whatsoever.
No, I love that.
And that would be the, one of the stars of So Cosmo. It's consistently in the background of New Jersey, like all the time. Deandra Barnwell, I think is her last name.
Oh my God.
Curly hair, one of the stars. She is always in the background on Jersey. She was at Melissa's Envy fashion show that Frankie did. She's like, you can see her face actively. She's in all the pictures. Her and Melissa are like really good friends. It's
that is my favorite thing. Like, I always love watching old episodes of The Hills and seeing like Sheena. It's like, oh, hey. I want to ask you too, if you could only listen to one Bravo song for the rest of your life, which song would it be?
Okay, if this is like not even a promotion, but it would be Monique Samuel's new one, Drag Queens.
Yes.
It's actually really good to the point where I don't mind bopping to it. The other ones, if I know that's probably a song, an answer that people are going to be like, oh, well, that's new and it's good. We want another one. My next one would probably be, I don't know, I'm a really big fan of Melissa's song.
I love really that. Like that, that's kind of a deep cut.
What's it called again? Oh god,
is it the way, are you talking about the one that's like when she's like, everybody's waiting for me to fall but I can't what is she, what's it called? Shit.
Oh no, I'm thinking of the other one, like the very, the one that everyone always is singing, On Display. That's
yes that's the one.
I love On Display. I think it's actually a really cute song. It's not good, but it is cute, you know?
Yes, totally. Because I feel like when I think of like Bravo music canon, I immediately think of like Countess and Friends, Kim Zolciak, you know? And I feel like a Melissa Gorga, a Melania Giudice, perhaps, a Monique Samuels. These are beautiful songs that need to be brought into the forefront.
I agree. I definitely think a Melania Giudice song. I don't know. I think you were a one-hit wonder. I don't know if she can strike gold like that again, but that was a really good time.
Oh
my
God.
That was a really good, fun video. You know what? I do change my answer. That one, it would be Monique's and then it would be Melania's. Because
I love that.
She's grabbing her besties, Tay-Tay and Stephanie. And I love watching the video because like the kids don't really understand what it means to be an extra in the video. And they're constantly mouthing the words to the
yes.
song.
Yes.
But like not in chorus, like not at the explicit direction of the director. They're not like, everyone sing now. It's like, they're just in the background, like trying to act. And then they're like singing the words because they've done that like 70 times now. I love it. It's a really good one. I think Melania is probably not, if I met her, I don't think I should meet my heroes. I think I would be.
No, I'm afraid of her.
Or something. Yeah. I'm very afraid of that child.
Yeah,
because
same.
She scares Teresa. And I think no one scares Teresa.
Yes,
so
that says
when
something.
She scares Teresa, I'm scared.
Yes. I also love Teresa's acting work in that music video where she's like, here's a game. You should play it. All right, I'll talk to you later. And she just closes the door to the bedroom and leaves. And then they're like, whoa. And they go into the game like Jumanji.
Yes, it's okay. It's insane. And then she like comes back at the very end and like takes the game away when they're sleeping. It's like, okay. I just find it hilarious. I really thought it was cute.
Iconic. Monty, let's get into you now. First and foremost, where did you grow up?
I grew up in, okay, so I'm a little bit of an all over the place kid, even though I was not, and no one's in the military. I don't know why this happened, actually. Mm-hmm. The DC area is where I'm from, specifically a county that it's not small, it's actually quite large, where Candace lives. It's called PG County, Prince George's County in Maryland. Mm-hmm. Both my parents are born and raised in DC. PG County is one of the largest Black counties in the nation. So mm-hmm. I grew up with the same idea of probably some people in some of these other franchises that I didn't know that white people existed. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate, but I was not made aware of that for a very many years. And so we moved to Dallas for middle school. And then I was slapped in the face with this.
Oh my God.
Overt racism. And I learned very quickly that they do exist. And I was like, oh, okay. This is the kind that they did not tell me about on Disney Channel. They did not tell me that this was a thing. And mm-hmm. then we moved back to Maryland and to a different side. And I was able to meet some other people where I realized they're not all like that. It's only a couple. Oh, goody. Okay. So So, and that's not to say all of Dallas was obviously racist. We didn't go to all of Dallas, but
right.
the experiences that I had were not that of the most positive. Mm-hmm. And so we moved back to Maryland, obviously, and then lived the longest closest to DC again, because that's just my parents felt like they should go back home. And mm-hmm. now I'm on my way to move to Georgia for some personal life things, just for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And the goal is always to come back to the DC, Maryland, Virginia area, also known as the DMV. Baltimore mm-hmm. is my favorite city in the world. DC, I think, is has a lot to be desired, and a lot is changing that makes me very sad. Mm-hmm. how things are being handled, but overall do love it. I'm just waiting for some renovations to go down before mm-hmm. I come back to DC. And yeah, but I'm an East Coast girl. The South considers Maryland and DC the North, but the North considers us the South. So we're just kind of like in limbo.
Yeah. You're there.
I'm just there. Mm-hmm, just sitting.
Wow. You've lived a bunch of places. I feel like I've never actually been to Baltimore or DC though, or Dallas for that matter, but I don't have much of a desire to go.
Okay. Yeah. Dallas is cool. If that's what you're into, there are people who make it cool. I mean, we see it on the show, but they look like they're having a great time. It's mm-hmm. It's for me because I grew up near and around DC, and my parents, because they were both from DC, all my mm-hmm. family lived in the city, right. and like, the real true DC, like back in the day DC. So mm-hmm. it's very urban, it's very city, it's very vibey. Mm-hmm. Now it's very much so fresh off a plane from like the West or the Midwest. And then they're like, you don't have poke bowls? Where are the poke bowls? We need poke bowls right here, please. And so it becomes very gentrified very quick.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, a lot of things I grew up with are no longer there, but like that real true city gray vibe is still there. And I truly love that aspect of it. Dallas to me didn't really give me all of that. It gave me very clean and cute. And I like to say DC and Baltimore, not like as you don't need to be as hardened as you do in New York. Like New York, it requires a special kind of grit. You
right.
need a special kind. I don't have it. I tried it. It didn't work.
I hate New York.
DC. Yeah. It's a lot for me. It's wonderful, but it was just really hard for my brain. Like it was not good. DC to me has a level of comfort. There's mm-hmm. a lot of comfort to that city. It still mm-hmm. feels very posh and, you know, because there's a lot of politics, a lot of cushy things are there.
Right.
And then you have Baltimore that is, to me, a lot truer of a city. It wasn't an accident. It was an accident. It kind of became this way. There's a mm-hmm. lot of ports and it's surrounded by water. A lot of people don't know that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's one of the first ports, like one of the very first ports in the U.S. So there's a lot of docks here for cruise ships and boat slips and stuff. So you literally have best of both worlds when there's major hills for running. So it's really scenic. And then there's a lot of city, there's beautiful architecture in some of the oldest buildings ever because Baltimore is so old. And then it's surrounded by water. So like I'm literally in Baltimore right now because my mom actually just moved and I am looking at a storm to like the west of me. And then to the east of me, there's nothing but water. And then behind me, there's nothing but buildings. It's amazing.
That sounds beautiful. Wait, is that where you Instagram storied from when you said goodnight from the upper level? Oh, it was beautiful.
Yes. Yes, it's my mom's new place. I helped her move before I moved to Georgia. And it's truly stunning. I mean, this is why she moved. I mean, even though she's from DC. And mm-hmm. it's a bit of a ways. It's why I always say, you got to give Robin a break because she lives closer to me now. We're in mm-hmm. Baltimore and the rest of them live closer to the airport in DC. It's about, for Robin, it's over an hour.
Really?
And that's without traffic. Yeah. It takes us like 40 to 45 minutes to get on that side. And that's not even where the airport is. It's actually like in Virginia. So right on the line in Virginia. So it would take Robin, and Robin's 20 minutes from where I am. So if it takes 45 minutes for me to get to it's easily an hour and a half. Like you got to give her a break.
Wow.
That's why she's always late. It's far for her.
That's why. Okay. I truly love having like the geographics of another city explained to me. Cause I know like when I watch Beverly Hills, I'm like, oh my gosh, well, if Erica lives in Pasadena and they're filming in West Hollywood, then if there's mm-hmm. traffic that day, it takes her, like, it's so interesting because when you haven't been to that place, you have no idea how far mm-hmm. apart they all are, but what a pain in the ass.
Yes. I just did like a housing price breakdown with someone on Instagram because they were just like, I'm really having a hard time grasping who has money on Potomac. And yeah. I was like, well, if you're looking at house and market value, I can help you there. That's yes. my area of specialty because every single place that they all live, I have lived. So I know what the comps are in all mm-hmm. of those areas. And it is harder to imagine because essentially Monique's house, though it doesn't look the biggest, like it doesn't look like it's the biggest house ever when we watch like, you know, Beverly Hills and stuff. Mm-hmm. It is a very well-priced house for this area.
Yeah.
So for here and where they live, it's more zip code because there are a lot of nice areas to live in this whole, like, you know, geographic, but mm-hmm. Monique's is obviously a premier place because it is the place that Bravo decided they were going to give a housewife franchise to because it's that exclusive to live in. It's mm-hmm. very exclusive and there's not a lot of Black women or Black people, you know, in the comps. Like there's not mm-hmm. as many of us as portrayed on the show. You would think that they would, if they all lived in Potomac, you would think that it was like this, you know, really falutin, like high class Black area. And it's not. Yeah. There are Black people that live there. I know a few, but like it's not overtly one way or the other. Well, it is actually overtly the opposite way. Mm-hmm. So it's more like it's a success that she does live there. And it's one of the reasons I believe Karen really wanted to go back there because she decided that she really wanted to be in a place where it is an accomplishment to live there right. as a successful Black couple and Black family. And I think I totally get that. But then you also have like Great Falls, which is like 30 minutes away from where Potomac is, but it's even richer. Like if you look up like richest cities in America, this area holds like 3 or 4 of them.
So, oh yeah. You told me that once. And I was like, no fucking way. I never even knew.
Yeah. It changes. Obviously they change a lot because of but for like 3 or 4 straight years, like in the early 2010s, you would have Great Falls, Virginia would be on that list. And that's like, it's like in the cut. You cannot mm-hmm. really find it on the Beltway. Potomac is, one of them, obviously. You have DC at large, but they don't live in DC. But in city wise, like you look at Giselle's house, it's $1 million knockdown. Like it was $999,000, and you essentially could have gutted it and thrown it. Like that was the point. Mm-hmm. Where she lived, and not even in Potomac, it's not even as much money as in Potomac, but that's simply what it costs to live in her city in that area of Bethesda in Rockville, Maryland. It's that much money. Even to knock it down. That's the
that's
case.
Wild. And see
Robin tweeted yesterday. They were like, they asked something about her. You know, she said, oh, her tagline said she's in a house full of ballers. And that doesn't mean money, right? And she goes, no, I'm the broke one. And she's not like, obviously, I don't want to say she's broke, but she does live in a more affordable, outskirted area
right.
on this side of Baltimore.
And I feel like she talks about money too more than the other women do.
Yeah, because it matters to her.
Right.
I mean, they're climbing back up, you know,
right.
people who didn't watch it, they went like bankrupt or something. And,
right.
you know, she didn't, that's one of the reasons they couldn't move out when they got divorced. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I would say it worked out. So maybe it's okay.
I know. I love them remarried. Together. I know. It's so cute.
I love them.
The more you fucking know, Monty, God, a wealth of information yeah. about the East Coast that I truly never would have known.
Yeah. I've had a lot of people be like, I don't even know where Maryland is on a map. And then all of a sudden they get here and they're like, oh, wow. Oh, it's popping over there. I'm like, it's
yeah. Sweet. Wow. Yeah. Well, I also feel like, yeah, when Potomac came out, I was like, where is Potomac? And I feel like the fact that I had
the hashtag.
Yes. The fact that I hadn't heard of the city, I was like, well, what do I care? I don't know what this city is. Whereas I feel like when I think of like New York or Beverly Hills or, you know, like truly a lot of the, I mean, like even like Miami, I was like, what the fuck do I know about Miami? Like I just didn't respond to it the same way. And now Potomac's easily my favorite franchise. So don't let the cities get in your way.
I don't want people to think that I'm making this up. In the 2013 CNN Money listed Potomac as the most affluent town. Thank you. In the
yes.
United States.
Yes.
Based, I'm going to even give you the median household income because yes. why not? Based on a median household income of more than $240,000.
Wow.
That's the median household income, people. Okay.
Damn.
Listen, you ask where is Potomac? It's where it is. How about that?
It's where the money is.
Yes. Well, for a lot of people who don't know, Potomac itself was I could have my history wrong, but I've always grown up to know that it was essentially created as a suburb for the government workers.
Mm-hmm.
Because they, like senators and stuff, they live in, they don't all live in DC.
Right.
So they would work in DC, in the nation's capital, with every single government agency has a headquarters here in DC or mm-hmm. an office here in DC, Maryland, or Virginia. They have to because it's by the White House. So they all live somewhere else where they can get more for their money, where they can have kids, they can have space. And that is basically what Potomac came to be. Some of the best school systems ever. They're very, very high. Montgomery County, which is the county that it's in, is one of the best school systems in the nation. It's Damn. Amazing because of it. And so they all live out there, but the money, like they build these beautiful homes, and you get someone like Karen, that home probably still costs her at least $2 or $3 million.
Right.
For that thing, you know, you got Monique saying it's cute.
Right. Oh my gosh. I know.
Amazing shade. Oh, they shade like none other on Potomac. They are the best readers I've ever seen.
I know. And then Monique laughing at herself being like, no, I'm not trying to be shady. I just, no, it's just, it's a cute house. So
she
funny.
Said it's cute for her and Mike.
Yeah.
And no, I died. I was cackling.
And the bird on the leash was just, iconic. Instantly iconic.
And Karen's reaction was even more iconic.
I cackled.
She was like, you better not.
Yeah. She's like, please put it in the cage. I would be the same way. I don't fuck with birds. Like, no, thank you.
Yeah, no, I'm not a bird person. There's too much going on with the birds. There's too much to look out for.
Exactly. Like erratic movements. Like we don't know when it's going to like fly into your face or bite you. Like, why is that fun to have around in your home or on your shoulder? Question, what was junior high like for you? So was this when you lived in Dallas, you said?
Yeah, I lived in Dallas from fifth grade to seventh grade. And mm-hmm. we left to come back in the eighth grade back to Maryland because, well, it didn't go so hot. I was going through a lot of like things. I had never, the school that I went to growing up before we moved to Dallas, I had never left that school. I was born and raised in that school.
Right.
So making friends anew was not a thing for me. I never knew how to do that. Every friend I had, I've known since I was little, and I was kind of like that girl that was the top bitch at my school. So mm-hmm. if anyone came in new who wasn't a part of that church or school, I was like, who are you? And then I became that new girl and amongst people, and I went to a lot of Christian schools. So when I went to Dallas, the same thing happened. I would go to a Christian school. So that means it's usually affiliated with a church mm-hmm. and that church has members whose all their kids go to the school. So they've all been there, known each other. It's mm-hmm. the same thing, the dynamic that I had. And that was really hard to navigate. I did not have a good time. My teachers were not, they were very threatened by me. And that's mm-hmm. not me being overly sure of myself or, you know, cocky. I could tell and felt it because I felt very targeted. It felt like anything I said, they would say things like if I said, oh, I grew up with so-and-so, or I knew that person, or I know what that word is, it would be, well, we were going to have to check with your mom to make sure that's true. Like, quickly to my face at 10.
Oh, so, what a mind fuck.
Yeah. So, I mean, it wasn't the best. In seventh grade, I had a teacher tell me that Juneteenth wasn't a real thing, so don't expect to celebrate it. So, and this was in Texas where Juneteenth happened. So I was like, oh, wait, this is a holiday? I've never heard of this. And she's like, wasn't like a real holiday. It's like, it don't expect to, like, you don't celebrate it. You don't get anything off for it. Newsflash, every school is already out. That's why you don't get anything off for it. But she told me that, though it's a part of the Texas curriculum to learn Texas history, so we had to learn about it. So imagine my surprise when this year, Juneteenth is like becoming a thing. And in my mind, I was like, are we really celebrating this? Because this is not a real thing. So it stuck with me all those years.
Yeah.
And I literally internalized that understanding because I'm trusting my teachers. And in sixth grade, I got suspended for doing something that probably wasn't great. I mean, I took a cupcake from a friend's mom. I just took it. I was hungry. I wanted the cupcake, right?
Okay, it wasn't listen. The best thing. It's a cupcake.
I was 12.
Yeah.
I was 12. Like, it's not like, I mean, and now I'm like, okay, there was a lot of preteen angst. There's a lot of things going on. It wasn't like I was some delinquent. I was simply like, I'm here by myself. This cupcake's here. I know whose cupcake it is, but no one's around. I don't want to ask. I'm just going to take it. And they gave me in-school suspension, but it was off campus and it was at a alternative school.
Oh my God.
They sent me to an alternative school for a full day instead because it was
for a cupcake.
though I had apologized, my teacher, whose room I was in that I took it from, she cried and begged them not to prosecute, essentially. Whose mom's bought it was like, this is one of my daughter's best friends. I don't care that she got this. Yeah. I really don't care. It's not that big of a deal. I bought it for all the kids in this club. Like, she's one of my daughter's friends. We had extra. It's fine. I don't really care. And I offered to pay for it. They had scolded me. We had 4 meetings about it. My parents had a meeting about it with the principal and the headmaster and the religion teacher. And I was still suspended. And then at the very end of the year, when it was like field day, and everyone was like, you get a certain group of activities based on like how many like demerits or like detentions or punishments you had. Mm-hmm. I had gotten in no other trouble that entire year, but I was in the room with kids who had tagged the building.
Oh,
and defaced it.
My God.
And so I could hear everybody outside yelling and having a great time. And me, nope, I am locked in a classroom just looking at the wall.
Oh,
my. On top of the suspension. And it's not like a woe is me story, just a junior high. It's so much of those things I did not even realize what they could mean until I got older. And during a lot of the whole, like, you know, muted, it's amplify Black voices thing, I was like, well, listen, hey, since people want to listen, they say they're listening. Let me tell y'all a couple of things that happened to me. And the response was so overwhelming. I had an anxiety attack and honestly thought I had COVID because my chest was that tight.
Oh my God.
I shared your stories too. No, but I know. And I'm glad people did because it helps other people be like, hey, I want to share my story too. And I think that's very important. That was
totally
the whole point. But I never even realized how much covert racism I've been through. I knew all the overt ones. I was like, okay, they're just racist. It's not that big of a deal. I mean, I get that it is, but like, I have to live with it every day. So I don't really always have time to be outraged by it. So like, okay, I'll handle that later. But the covert ones, I was like, oh shit. Oh wow. Oh wow. And I started really letting it marinate. Like, I'm asking friends, like, is this fucked up? What I went through, was that fucked up? And they're like, yeah, no, that was fucked up. And I was like,
isn't that wild? Like, needing someone to tell you that something was fucked up, because since it's your own experience, it's almost like as a defense mechanism, I imagined you were just like, well, it is what it is. I'm just going to keep it moving because what else are you going to do?
I didn't think there was anything of it. I was like, I think these teachers, they know me. I'm in their class. There's no way they can dislike me because of my race. But there is a chance that they could hold me to a different standard and be a little less forgiving because they could think they're doing me a favor by making sure that I'm not the little Black girl that becomes the thief, though it was one cupcake. And they're like, well, we just really want you to do better and break the stereotype. And well, to be honest, the way you're treating me is you're reinforcing that stereotype.
100%.
You're making it seem as if because I am Black and I have taken something that did not belong to me, instead of that being a teachable moment for a child where we can talk about that and you can tell me why that's not okay and try to maybe work through why I did it or what was going on in home, in class at that time that I feel like not seen, not heard. What is it? Which is usually why children do things, because they're trying to like act out something they're feeling. They don't know how to express it.
Right.
Instead of doing that, we're going to punish you to the fullest extent of these bylaws because we absolutely cannot stand for this. And it's like, I get that that's your stance, but I don't know how many different times this would have happened that you'd be able to exercise this equally across the board, which means that since it's such a freak thing that happened, we probably could have handled it differently because I have been in your class all year and you do know my character.
Right.
You do know who I am. So if you're not going to do that, there is probably an underlying reason as to why.
Right. Well, and also, like, I would argue, what 12-year-old child, regardless of their race, wouldn't want a cupcake if they're sitting in a room and looking at cupcakes? Like, I just, do you know what
they're
I mean?
Giant. I'm sorry. I'm not going to justify my actions. They were giant and beautiful.
Yeah. Like, no, please. I don't know that I could turn down a cupcake now if I were just alone in a room looking at beautiful cupcakes. Like, come on now. Also, I would imagine too, because you're a teacher now, like, have those experiences of yours sort of influenced like how you, you know, discipline and or like talk to your kids? Or your students?
Absolutely. I think that I have a responsibility, and I think it helps to have people of color teach children of color in diverse classrooms. And I've said often, you know, if you're feeling like you don't know if you can trust even your school system or making sure your kids are educated, because I know a lot of moms and stuff who are white, who want a very diverse and inclusive message to be sent across to their children. The fact and the problem is that because of the laws and the way our society, you know, definitely over relies on the education system for a very universal understanding of what it means to be educated. Each of these kids spends all of their time at school and minimum time at home, which means parents have to do a lot of reteaching and relearning and unlearning and unteaching in order for their kids to have the experience that they really want them to have, which is to be prepared for the world and to understand how to deal with other people.
Right.
The only thing with that is if other characters are involved in the teaching of these children, and I say characters, meaning teachers, figures on TV, books, all these things, if there's a lot of different kinds happening around them, you will see that a lot of it doesn't, it's a lot easier to understand both children and also teach them how to deal with other people and how to not kind of associate different things with different types of people. It's that simple. And so as a teacher now, I think that, you know, it's very important that I have classrooms that are diverse, that look different than me, but also look different from each other, because kids are kids. Literally, they do not think about being prejudiced or discriminatory. It's not in their minds at all. And that is just the truth. And I know everyone says, well, you know, kids, they're not born to hate and we have to teach them love. I'm like, I promise you, any ounce of a kid that you've seen have any kind of resemblance of that, it was taught to them. Because I'm around these people all day. These small humans literally change best friends every 10 to 15 minutes. And the qualifications have nothing to do with color. Not a thing. They're not looking to have a one black friend so they can say they're not racist. They're not looking to be like, you know, I like your, they literally are like, this kid has a cool toy. I want to play with that cool toy. Now I'm going to play with this person the entire week until I basically separate them. And then they have a new friend who's now next to them on the other side. So it has helped me punish or discipline kids in a different way, because essentially for me, negative reinforcement never works. It also takes a lot of pressure and it makes me feel like I have to really show up and watch them. If I'm like, you can't do this for 15 minutes. Now I have to really be responsible for that for 15 minutes. And I don't always have time to do that with 20 kids in the room. So I like to more so educate, teach, learn, understand. And I get that's the harder part. That's the longer part. But it's the one that's to me the most impactful, because I don't know what, especially because of what I just said about my junior high experience, I don't know what of what I'm saying is going to click now for these kids or click in 20 years. So it's more important to me that I just handle it right, even if it takes 4, 5, 6, 7 times. And I explain to them why we don't do this in my classroom, why we don't talk to our friends this way, why this doesn't happen, and find out why we did it. What was the cause behind that? Because if that is whatever the answer is, it usually does not need to result in whatever the action was. And disassociating those two really helps with kids. And I don't know if that's going to make or break them in the future, but I know that for right now, it's working. So, and it's different than what I had.
That's so, that has to be empowering too, as an educator, being like, here's where like my teachers might've failed me. And now being able to like be a great educator for these young kids who are like literally learning about the world, like for the first time.
And I think it's important that, like I am getting my master's right now also in elementary education. So, and it's always learning that we can't say to kids when you get into the real world and dismiss what they go through. And I get that's also why, you know, punishing and stuff is a lot easier. And I'm not a parent, so I don't know what it's like to be on like time crunches and things like that, where obviously you're doing the best you can. So shout out to you anyway for raising new humans, you know? But overall, it's very, it's a lot easier for kids if you just come to where they are, because they can't come to where you are. They do not know what traffic means, bills, other real problems, race. So when to say things like in the real world, this is their real world. What's happening to them is their whole world. So whatever happened in school, it is their existential crisis. So understanding what they're going through and not dismissing any bad behavior either because we're busy. We got a lot of things going on. So our kid, you know, calling out one kid a name, it's just like, okay, don't do that because the teacher doesn't want you to. No, it's a little more, it has to be a little bit more than that. That's how we can work with our teachers and with our families, because this is their kid's whole world. So whatever reason that they have behind their actions is for something. It means something right now. It's because of something, because they have nothing else to worry about but this.
Right. Like, that is everything for them. I so agree. Like, it's one of those things, because I have a sister who's a lot younger than me too. And like, she's about to go into high school. And, you know, like, she's kind of just going through a tough time because she's like, you know, this sucks. I'm bored. I'm home. I want to be in school with my friends. And it's like, you know, when you hear that, like, a kid's, I don't know, like, in a shitty mood, or just like, it's like, well, you have to get down to the why, because people don't just behave that way in a vacuum. There's always like a cause or something else going on there.
Yeah. And I can't imagine what it's like to not be able to have all the things that are good about high school, because so much about high school is absolute bullshit. And
yeah.
That's just the truth. I didn't want to teach it because I didn't want to be a part of it again. It's too soon for me.
Right.
I am like, that whole organization, the entire entity of high school can kiss my ass. Like, I hated it. It was, and I was relatively liked and like popular in the sense of I was friends with like everyone. And I still was like, I'm so over this bullshit, but I still could not understand. I would never be able to understand what it's like to not be able to have even the good times that I did have, because I had a lot of good times. And that's kind of the point of being teenagers, is that there's a lot of lows and then there's a lot of highs, and they're both very extreme. And the highs are now not there, but also kind of neither are the lows in a lot of ways. Like, the lows are now not there either. So you kind of don't even have this entire experience to learn and grow from, or to even realize who your friends really are, or, you know, what you like about the world, what you don't like, what you want to do differently. Like, I found out that I loved English and wanted to be an English teacher, or wanted to be in English and get my major in English in high school. Because I really connected with the English curriculum, and it took me very far. And it started off with me hating it and being really bad at English in my first couple years of high school, and going to like help after school. And then all of a sudden I'm in AP and I'm doing advanced placement work, and I'm like, it's my major in college. That happened in high school. So there was a lot of greats that I would never have appreciated without the low, low points. But now to kind of have both removed kind of makes me feel like teenagers in those stages of both highs and lows, they're almost apathetic. They don't really have either side to experience. So yeah, they're bored, and it's the worst thing in the world to be bored as a teenager.
Oh my, it truly feels
it
like
is
hell.
Not normal.
Yeah.
It's not good.
Well, I want to ask too, sort of in the vein of high school, was there a favorite outfit that you wore to a school dance?
To a school dance. Yeah. I mean, it's part of my prom. I went to Catholic school. For the last couple of years of high school. So we had dress down days. So we didn't have a lot of time to, you know, dress up. And it wasn't until I was a senior that I could actually wear all my outfits and really be cute. But I always dressed like someone's little business professional. I was such a different girl. I was a blazer girl.
Ah, that's so chic.
Oh my God, blazers, big bangles, headbands. I don't know what you call
a
that.
A full Gossip Girl moment. Girl.
Yeah, I was pretty much inspired very much like by Blair Underwood.
Yes.
No, that's not her name. Blair Waldorf. Blair Waldorf. Oh my God. I was literally looking at a TV poster just now. So Blair Underwood was on it. Blair Waldorf was, I felt her. She felt me. We were one. So
yes.
I was that. But to a dance, it would have to be my prom. I wore a mini dress. I'm the only person in my entire prom that wore a short dress.
That is a power
move. I didn't
want to
be different. I am short. So it was very short because I am very short. Now, what was like a sign of difference, but it was a strapless Zac Posen bridesmaid dress.
Oh.
So it was made for a wedding. It was short and it was like cut like a cocktail dress and like flared on the sides and really cute on top. And I wore pink rhinestone stilettos, but like light paint, like rose. So rose and black. And that was my prom look.
Okay. My jaw is agape. That sounds incredible. Zac Posen is like truly a dream designer for me. And like iconic that you casually wore a Zac Posen to prom.
Yeah. My mom, we went shopping with my at the time, like really, really great best friend. Mm-hmm. And we were looking for her dress, and she wanted very traditional, like light colors, like blue or pink or red or purple. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, all the, and there's like no shade, and that she looks great in it. And it was bedazzlement on the top and everything. And I was like, that's cool, but I don't want that. So at the dress store, I was like, ooh, what are these? She's like, oh, these are bridesmaids dresses. And I said, I like that. I want this one. And it was short, and it was, there's that clothing collection. So it wasn't the most you could spend on a prom dress. I wasn't into that. So, but it was done nice. It was a good dress. It was, I wore it more than once. It got a lot of wear out of it, but also I could wear it more than once because it was just a short black cocktail yes. dress.
Truly.
See, this is the reason why if I'm going to spend a lot of money on something, really make a statement. It's going to be a labeled one. I'm going to wear it into the fucking ground.
100%. I truly like look back on like what I must have put my mom through in high school and like the amount of pressure I put on finding like the perfect dress. And she's like, you're not going to wear that again. And like she would get it for me anyway because I was a fucking brat about it. But like truly, yes, exactly. But like such a good point. The fact that you can wear your prom dress more than once, again, a real like power move.
Yeah, I can wear it now.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I had to get rid of my prom dress recently because I was like, I'm never going to fit in this again. But it was like, it was a short, like purple kind of puffy dress. And it's so funny that you brought up Blair Waldorf because I was inspired by Blake Lively, like at some red carpet event when I was styling myself for prom. And so I had like a big ponytail and like a short dress and like a big earring. And I thought I was like the shit.
Oh my gosh. And my dress was built corseted, like not fully, like you don't have to like tie me into it, but yes. The body of it really was fitted towards course, like to like a corset and flared out. So it really does work for like another after five or something like that. And it's very, you know, it's very flattering. So I was very happy to have that. And I can always let it out. Like that's the thing. You can always like let those kind of dresses a little bit out or tailor it back in.
Yeah.
It's simply like chiffon and silk. That's all it was. So
can't go wrong.
Are, you know, but yeah, those are fabrics that we can, you know, we can make happen again. But yes. I don't know when we're going to have purple thread. So
right.
When am I going to wear that again? And to what?
I know it's like, well, I mean, honestly though, wearing a prom dress around my house is like something I would do at this point in quarantine just because I'm fucking bored.
Please
so,
do.
You know. Yeah.
No, that's use. That is getting great use out of it.
Yeah, exactly. I want to ask you too, which cartoon character, like, would you, I always word this question differently because I feel weird asking it, but I love asking it. Which cartoon character would you like make out with if you could?
Oh, wow. Are we going like heteronormative or does it matter?
Oh my God. I have literally made a strong case for why I would make out with Simba like a million times on this podcast. So like, you know, if I'm making a case for like a cartoon lion, like literally do whatever you want.
Okay. Awesome. Wow. I don't know how old school to go because I am a kid of like very much so Cartoon Network days. So
yes.
Those were really heavy in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I would have, it's a toss up with, I love strong and powerful women, but it's a toss up between like Sam from Totally Spies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really dating myself. At
Wait,
this moment.
I have to Google this person, but keep going.
Yes, me too. Sam from Totally Spies. And let me see if I can get a little bit more recent. Man, I haven't watched cartoons in forever. So that is, so maybe someone we can watch on Disney Plus. Let me do that. Let me do Disney Plus.
Okay, wait. Sam's cute. I'm totally
right?
behind this choice.
She
yeah.
also was always the badass. Like she's
I was
the
gonna say.
One of the spies. So she's the one who's like kicking actual butt.
Yes.
Like doing things while the other ones do what they were casted to do. And
yes.
So I was really deeply into Sam. And then another one, although this is also dating me, I would say Static Shock. People may not know who that is, but he was a black superhero on Cartoon Network in the early 2000s. And I watched
hot
him
too.
Every day. He was amazing. He had like short dreads and he was on like a trash can lid and he like had electricity power. So I was deeply attracted to his ability to keep the lights on.
Yes.
And run stuff, you know? And he's like soft crime and things like that. And I was like, that is so cool. Let's do more of that.
Yes. And he has like a cool like hoverboard.
Yeah, it's like anything that he could pick up that was metal, he could ride on. And I was we're making things shake. You know, I love that. I love a resourceful person. So yeah, I haven't really gotten deep into animals of the cartoon nature yet, but now it'll be always on my mind.
I never want to take this question out, but everyone has a different response where they're kind of like, oh, like there's always like a response to it. That's like, huh. I've had a lot of people say like Johnny Bravo. I've had some people go like full Disney and just say like, you know, like a Prince Eric perhaps, but you know, I just feel like cartoons are like, they're the first, like, I feel like there are so many beautiful cartoons because that's like how they're drawn. And like, I feel like a lot of people's like early crushes were like cartoons.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I know there were people that I wanted to emulate because they were on like, as a cartoon, like the Proud Family. I wanted DC to be in that friend group. I was like, I need to be involved. Someone needs to pick me up. I want to be there. And it was what I wanted to be when I was in high school. So yeah, I totally get that.
Who would be your celebrity bestie and why?
My celebrity bestie. Oh God, how cliche can I be? I would say like Cardi B.
Oh my gosh, what a fun celebrity bestie.
So badly want to be involved in all things Cardi B or Megan Thee Stallion. And that I think Megan and I actually should be friends. We are like barely a year apart. So I don't understand why we're not friends.
Yes.
It's probably because she is a successful rapper that does not live anywhere near me. And that's probably why we're not friends yet. But take that away and we could be BFFs. I think that we would have a really, really great time together. And then non-musical, I don't know, the Housewives are my friends. I just want them all to be my friends. I would love to be friends with like an Ashley Darby type. I actually think we would get along really, really well. I really love her.
Mm-hmm. Those are great answers.
Thank you.
I feel
I don't
like
think a lot about this.
I truly the questions I ask, like the things that come up in my like pop culture brain. I'm like, does anyone else think about this? In another random vein that I hatched in my head, do you have a revenge fantasy? And if so, what is it?
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh God, how people are think I'm so petty.
I'm petty too. That's why I wrote this question.
Because I think about it. It's almost like I have to pick which one because that is how many times I'm a Taurus. So a lot of times I spend my days replaying confrontations that I'm like, this is what I would have said. And then I really get into it.
Yes.
And in my shower.
Yes.
I feel much better. And now I'm like, you know what? I let her have it. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Yes, my revenge fantasy would. There's a friend, no longer a friend of mine, who we were really, really tight for a while. And this was when I was young. And I don't really know what it was that kind of made her feel like she just didn't want to be my friend anymore, but like she got too big for her britches. And she tried to tell my boyfriend at the time that he did not need basically to be with me. We had gotten into a fight like at this, at an event, like at the back of school night or something like that, where she was no longer at that school. And I was returning to this school that was my school. Like, before she even ever got there, she was only there for like 2 years. This was a school that I grew up in. I knew this school. This was my school. So when we moved back to Maryland from Texas, this was my school. So I am like back in my element. I am dating this boy who he also has been there forever. And that's kind of how like the hierarchies worked at that time in this high school. God, this feels so MTV.
No, I love this. I live for this.
So CW almost.
Yes.
But she and I guess just fell off, but she would have been in this boy's class because he was older than me. So she felt it necessary with her and her little minions to approach him, even though I had already left. She had nothing to say when I was there. But I had left to go home for the night and he called me and was like, oh yeah, she was saying that, she was like laughing, like, oh, so you and Imani are going out now. Like, oh, that's cute. LOL. And was laughing and stuff. And I promise you, I told my mom, I was like, you can turn this car around because if she has something that she needs to say, I have time for her to say it to me. My mama did not turn that car around. So obviously I spent many nights thinking about what I would have said. And I replayed it. And I was like, I am going to get her. I was going to come between her and her boyfriend.
Yes.
Come at her. I was going to tell her how I felt about this. And it played over and over the speech in my head of how I would have clapped back at that ass.
Yes. No, and wait, so you didn't like come for her on like AOL Instant Messenger, like leave her, you know, a MySpace message?
No, at that point, we were Yahoos. And at that point, it was already over. Like the Yahoo, she had already blocked me. I already blocked her. We already weren't friends.
That's so diabolical.
How dare she? Oh, just awful.
Truly.
So, really thought about that for a long time. Quite a many year. Really wanted to. I've definitely thought about writing Yelp reviews for past schools and things. Like the school that had me suspended, thought about a Yelp review. Definitely.
Oh, yes. I love
Think about it often, actually.
You know,
would love
it's
to
like,
be like, you know, it's been about 15 years. Mm-hmm. This place deserves a 1-star.
Whatever offers you a sense of peace and closure. And like, I just had friend of the pod, Joe Gunn, on, and he was like, you know, like, I don't feel like I need revenge fantasies because I'm like at peace with, you know, people who have wronged me. And I'm like, that's so evolved of you. But I, on the other hand, live to, you know, like, give me a little penny.
Now I feel the pressure to profess with, I am in therapy, so this does not keep me up. Anymore?
No,
I just simply have thought about it for a very long time.
But for sure.
Me forgive. So that's if anything, if you relate to me, people, and you hear what I'm saying, you're like, you know, I kind of feel like that too. And let me tell you, therapy does work because I no longer think about it, but I still have it in me. And that's important.
Yes, I completely agree. And I think it's also like, I think it's part of healing too, to at least think through those scenarios. Like, you know, you're not going to act on them probably, but like even giving yourself a little like moment of like visualizing how you would have handled it. Like, I think that can be healing as well.
I think so too. I think it's good to get it out. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And not necessarily on the person, because a great many of my days have been like, you know, especially since that one time I got suspended, I have been increasingly aware that I don't really get to react all the time the same way because I really don't know what my fate would be. Mm-hmm. And I know that seems like kind of harsh, you know, to go from something so light to something like that, but it's true. I mean, in this time and this climate and my whole life, I've never really known what my fate would be explicitly. Mm-hmm. I don't know what side the cop would be on that day or who would want to press charges and how that would affect my life for the rest of my life. And I've already been told that I might have to work harder. Well, will, but I would probably have to work a little bit harder as a woman and as a Black woman. And just in general, you know, we kind of have to do things sometimes a little bit more on top. And we have to be a little bit more on top of things if we want to go some of the same places. So I've never really been able to react on, you know, those revenge things, but that also can cause a lot of resentment. So I think it's very important to, that's why I'm such a proponent for therapy or, you know, talking to someone. I like therapy because it's like talking to your friend, but like they don't have a boundary on where you can stop talking to them. And because you need to respect that as well. They don't need to carry all your burdens, but it also doesn't mean you have to keep everything inside. So that's why I like therapy, because I'm like, you still need to get it out. Because you hear me many, many years later still talking about whooping this girl's behind.
Right.
Because she decided to tell my boyfriend that he shouldn't be with me. How dare you?
Right.
First of all, who do you think you are? And you used to be my best friend. So she needs words still. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really get to react on that because it would not have been productive to the moment. It really wasn't my character, but I was allowed to feel how I feel. Mm-hmm. Someone still needs to hear it. It just needs to be someone who doesn't have their own emotional things to labor through.
Exactly. And then it's a safe space for you to get it off your chest and low stakes.
I love a therapist.
Yes.
They love to take it. Who doesn't love being told, you're right, that really was fucked up. I'm sorry.
Right?
Thank you. And I'm like, that's all I'm saying. That's all I wanted.
Right. Because I also think like, I think it's so easy to sort of talk yourself into being like, oh, like I'm being sensitive or I'm being irrational or I'm overreacting. But the fact is like your emotional response to something that happens to you is your emotional response. And like, therefore it is valid. You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. Precisely. That.
Yep. And your therapist is like, yeah, it is valid. As opposed to like, you know, your friend that's like, oh my God, I think you're being sensitive. I think you're overreacting. And you're like, no, I'm fucking not.
And the therapist tells me different ways that I can kind of process these feelings without hurting someone else and myself.
It's right.
So win-win. I honestly feel like I'm underpaying her. She needs a raise, just not from me.
That's literally, that's how I feel about my therapist too. And sometimes I feel like I come in every week and I just say the same anxious thoughts over and over and over again. And I'm like, the fact that you're still sitting here listening to me worry about this thing yes. is beautiful. Really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Love her. Have her this weekend. I can't wait.
I know. I look forward to my therapy sessions too. Yes. Do you ever have do you have like a fun, like ritual, like when, like on your therapy days, what is it?
On my therapy days, I go to the chiropractor in the morning and I get my body right, you know, I get aligned. I feel better. I feel more alert in myself. Mm-hmm. It helps with all the pains that I feel. Because a lot of times with the stress and anxiety, I tend to physically manifest it.
Yes.
So it'll become physical for me. So that gets me right. And it's early. And then I go get my favorite latte. And then my favorite coffee shop, get my favorite latte. I like to support all the people. And then I get my favorite sandwich, which is a smoked salmon croissant with cream cheese on it. Gluten-ass bitch. I need to get over myself. I get that, and then I come home, and I still do telemedicine for my therapist because she, before her therapy practice, she was an RN and still has her license her career before, but she decided because of COVID to actually reactivate and go back into the hospitals. So she's still in the front lines. So I see her via the telemedicine. Like on the TV, on the iPad, we do it and we talk to each other. And then I feel much better. I always take a shower afterwards. I eat some delicious food. It is usually Chipotle because it's really a big deal where I'm at.
Yes.
And then I binge something awesome and eat my yummy, delicious food.
Moni, that is a beautiful day. Like you
it's just fantastic.
You gave me so many beautiful ideas.
Yes.
Wow.
You better manifest an entire day for yourself. I don't really talk on my phone a lot. I like to keep it chill. Back before the quarantine and everything, I would go get my nails done afterwards. And I love a manicure because I always get a full set. So it means that for 35 to 40 minutes, I can't touch my phone. I put on a podcast, much like Not Aspirational with Hannah Brown.
Oh.
And I just listen and I'm involved in something that it has nothing to do with me, where I'm listening to other people talk and other people do things. And I cannot touch my phone. No one's asking me for nothing. I'm not on social media. And I just am like, make my nails beautiful. And so, but now I just go get my food to go. I like to, you know, support the businesses and stuff and still eat and be happy. And I come home and I watch all of the different streaming apps that I pay a lot of money for.
Wow. What an act of self-care. I feel like you are such a self-care advocate. And I also feel like you're really good.
Yeah.
Yes. And I feel like you're really good on your social media too, being like, I'm off for the day, like, bye. And I just like really admire that because I feel like, especially as a content creator, like I also feel like, you know, like you have a following now. And I feel like there's this pressure to like churn out new content all the time. And I just really admire your ability to be like, I'm out for the day. Like I got to do me. Have you always been so good at like making boundaries in that way?
I think boundary work, it's great that I'm trying now to do this because, and to be this person. And it's mainly because I have worked so hard in therapy. I had a lot, I have a very, tumultuous history and now very strained and boundary ridden relationship with my father. So, if it wasn't for me having to practice such intense boundaries with an actual family member, oh honey, it's easy. It's hot to do it with strangers. I owe no one anything. If I don't owe him anything, I owe no one anything.
Incredible.
I do try to put out content and it was really hard in the beginning, but at the same time, I realized the people who want to be here are going to be here. And I try to engage with everyone and then DM everyone back or at least like it, at least see it, at least respond to it. So they know I did see it. It's a goal I always set for myself since the very beginning. Now that I have a growing platform, it does get harder, but I don't give up on it. It just means that it's going to take me time and I can't always be in that space. I can't. And there's a lot of things that make me angry. So I kind of say my piece because it's my social media and then I just get out. Because I don't really need to stick around and I let the trash take itself out and then I respond to whomever's left.
Wow. That's truly genius and so inspiring because I just feel like making boundaries is, it's so disempowering when you want to make boundaries, but you don't feel like you're in a place with your own self-worth where you can. And like, truly, that's just like goals, Moni, to just be
you know what? I've seen a lot of people who started around the same time as me and who were smaller than me. They've gotten much bigger than me and everything. And to me, it's all love. If that's what's meant for them, that's what's meant for them. Mm-hmm. But for me, I don't want to hide behind one meme or a logo. It's my face. And that means I have to be proud of what I put out. Mm-hmm. And I try to do it very thoughtfully. And that doesn't mean that everyone needs to. They can do whatever they want. It's literally their social media. But I also, I think I always used to say that I took a lot of classes for, I worked a lot with lawyers and in the law world. Mm-hmm. That was the career I wanted me to go into before education. Mm-hmm. And I am explicitly aware of the First Amendment. And I'm always like, you know, you can say whatever you want, but you can't choose the response. And so how I'm allowed to feel however I feel about what you said. So you can say whatever you want, but as can I. But I try to do it very thoughtfully simply because this is something that I have to be proud of at the end of the day. And it's something that could all be fleeting. This is not that serious to me. Even though it is serious, I need to, and I take it seriously. I can't live my life solely by the algorithms that are Instagram because I'm going to be disappointed or mad every single day. So
well said. Yeah.
I literally have to be involved in my life and be fully present because it's a full-time job being a content creator. And even though I do it so minimally, I'm still very exhausted a lot of the times. And then I'm also in school and I also, you know, beforehand was teaching. So I have a lot of things. You know, I have a family, I have a relationship. I've had a lot of things that I have to do and be present for. And let me tell you, as much as people think that I'm not on social media a lot, everyone else in my life is like, put it down. I'm talking to you. And I'm like, oh.
I know.
Too, and we're talking about Bravo, so I have to talk to them.
I know. That's the interesting thing about making content too, is like I'll definitely feel that pressure too. Like I need to respond right now. And it's like, even though no one's pressuring me, like I can literally look at my DMs whenever, but it's not like a 9-to-5 job where you just like clock out and go home. It's like, you're on your phone and you're watching Bravo in real time with everybody else. So as a Bravo content creator, it's like, oh, I gotta be on. And it's like, but you actually don't, like, you don't have to put that on yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Listen, I do what I try to do, but I also try to create a place that feels more like a conversation, even if I don't always respond back. People feel like I'm not just producing content about Bravo, that they know exactly who I am and what this page is and what the podcast is, pretty upfront. And that is a full-time job, but it also means I got to get back to my life. And the same way they get to log off and come back and there's something waiting for them. There is something waiting for me when I log off and it's my life. So I try to do both. You know, I try to do the memes and stuff, but I just wait for things to speak to me. And there is a lot of pressure, but I found myself taking a lot of the pressure off of myself. And, you know, does it mean I grow a little slower? Yeah, that's also very fine for me. I don't really care because I want quality, not quantity.
Yeah. And you're also, then you're able to grow from this like very authentic, like at peace, aligned place with yourself where you're like, I'm not straining myself in a way where this isn't fun for me anymore to do this thing that I'm doing because I thought it was fun when I started. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
I think, do you know
yep.
what I mean?
And there's been a lot of times that I've thought I need to end this. I need to like let this go. Or I would have a lot of anxiety about it. And I'm like, you know what? If I'm going to be in that place, I need to get off. And that makes me want to enjoy it again. It makes me want to get on again. If you want to say something, want to post something.
Yeah.
I have a fun idea, but I can't come up with great memes if I don't live life. Like I have to live it.
Yes.
And be annoyed by it and then bring it to y'all with a cute little Bravo gift.
Right. Oh, that's such a good point. I have a question too. Do you have a hype up song? And if so, what is it?
Oh my God. Probably. Yeah. I listen to a lot of music period to get hype. There's a fun phenomenon. I'm really going to age myself here. There was a series of books called The Click.
And I love those books.
Oh my God. Lacey Harrison was probably one of the greatest writers I've ever known. She is amazing. She also wrote, I think, Monster High, which was bought by Disney and everything. So that's why she abandoned us at the Click. But they had this thing that they did in the Click where, and I would hear it, they would have walking songs. So the Click would literally sing a certain song, a chorus in their head and they would all walk strut into like the cafeteria together at the same time on the same tempo. And I have modeled my life after that probably since I was like, I don't know, 13 years old reading this.
I love that.
There's a lot of songs that I walk to. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of songs that I do think get me hype. They tend to be some level of like trap music or hip hop. And simply because that is, not to think too much into it, it helps me feel centered in a weird way, having beats that are like a little bit more upfront and that I have to like kind of bop my head to. I even like will study to it or fall asleep to it because I struggle a lot with dysthymia and like a double depression in a way. So listening to songs that are very vibey or like slow, I can like them. And I like love a Billie Eilish, for instance.
Right.
But sometimes it will literally cause me anxiety because of how mellow the tones are.
Yes.
It makes me feel depressed. Like I'm literally now about to cry and nothing has happened to me. But it's because this beautiful song suddenly must feel my depression and it's like singing it. And I can't be in this space anymore.
Yes.
So I like to keep it a little bit hyper. So I have a very hype playlist altogether, but I don't know. It's probably, it's almost anything by Megan Thee Stallion. I absolutely adore her. I think she's amazing. If to be so young, finish her degree while she's on top of the world. I mean, she literally finished a degree while also being out there as a superstar. And
like, how does she do that?
Anything. I don't know. I didn't have any responsibilities and it was hard for me to finish my degree. Yeah. So I had nothing else going on, but I love her albums. I obviously the Savage remix with Beyonce.
Incredible.
Just play it at my funeral because that's what I want to be remembered as.
Yep. Yep.
The Savage remix with Beyonce.
I feel like I really need to explore Megan Thee Stallion's like catalog more because I have like one of my close friends is like, I cannot with the TikTok and the Savage because she's like, I've been listening to her forever. And there's so much music that I have to explore, but because I'm, you know, a basic white girl on TikTok, all I know is Savage.
Okay, well, I would challenge you to listen to the one with Beyonce. It is done a little differently.
That
Beyonce
one was given to me on Spotify.
It's so much better.
It's amazing.
And it's not to say that the other one was not great. It was great. It was just overplayed. So the Beyonce one really gave me a fresh new perspective.
Yes.
I am a huge fan of her premiere and debut album, Fever. I think that's her first like major studio album. And then Tina Snow is one of her original ones. It's a really great one. That's where Big Ol' Freak, which is like her first big single that came out before she invented the phrase Hot Girl Summer, which she later made a song because she invented that phrase. So the phrase came before the song, but the song was more of a response because what she created became this major entity. And the song is cute. It's very much so for radio play. And I think it's because she knew that her phrase became very transcended to multiple different groups and people. And that's fine. We love that. But Fever, the album, is a fantastic song. I would challenge you specifically to listen to Cash Shit featuring
DaBaby.
Megan has such a way of making, the reason she created the phrase Hot Girl Summer is because she makes music for the woman who is like, yes, we're sexually active and we don't care, but we also make our own money. But yeah, sure. If you want to buy me something, I'm not going to say no to it. That's your fault. You chose this life. But like she makes music for the woman who is not apologizing for being whomever she is.
Yes.
And if that's being, you know, cause she was in college. So she's like, I'm trying to make my own money. Obviously she's hustling, you know, but if a man is like, I'm so turned on by you that I want to buy you a Birkin bag, I'm also going to take that bag.
Right.
Fill it up with your money and my money because I like the money, not because I like you. And that's what we love.
Yes. An all encompassing, like an all encompassing track that like speaks to just like a woman's experience because I'm so sick of this like bullshit idea that like if I receive a gift from, you know, a man or anyone that I also am not a hustler who wants to make my own money and buy myself nice things. Like both of those things can exist in one human being and like more power to you.
She's very much so. Yes. I let these men come in here you know, tell me how much they love me, how much, how pretty I am. And then mm-hmm. I let them do what they do to me because I like what they do to me. And then yes. I send them on their way out of yes. my home. You don't get to stay in my duvet cover, honey.
Empowering.
Like, it's she's amazing because of it. And I really, really admire her ability to be like, yeah, I like what you do. I like what you give me, but also, okay, and I gotta go do me. But like, I'll call yes. you when I'm ready. And I am here for that. Like, go ahead.
Yes. Wow. What a self-actualized person. Now I can't wait to dive in. And obviously I'll be reporting back because listen, you brought Potomac into my life. So now you're beginning my Megan Thee Stallion journey and I'm really excited about it.
Yes. And it's like what I've always said. I know if people would like, you can always find the clean versions on like Apple Music or something. If you are into that, if you want to just kind of keep yourself safe, but still enjoy, but we're not really going to understand the complexities of the Black experience and how different it can be if we're not regularly visiting these spaces that we are, where I am. And I've said it on my podcast before, I don't really have a choice to not be in a white space. I don't really right. have that option. I have to seek out spaces that aren't actively all white or majority white or something like that. I have to seek out spaces that are Black spaces because it's a lot smaller and more niche to find, but they're there. But we can have that. We can both do that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And if other people who are not Black or other people of color, if they're not actively in our spaces, they won't really know what is offensive. We'll always have to tell them because right. they won't really understand our experience because they've never seen it. They never watched it on TV. They've never seen the different types that there are, but we have seen all the different types that there are, you know, of the white experience. Like right. currently right now, Netflix just put out like an entire list of 90s sitcoms and like early 2000s sitcoms of all Black shows.
Yes.
It really decided to show up for this idea of like making Black content regular and not just like a Black History Month or like a Juneteenth thing. Mm-hmm. They've been like, we're going to get the licenses since we can't film a lot of stuff. We're going to go ahead and get the licenses for some major Black shows. And if you are not currently watching or binging or rewatching Moesha, what are you doing?
My favorite show growing up, all those UPN shows.
There's nothing else to watch.
Yes.
But Moesha. Like, hello. It was the greatest day of my life when they came out with Moesha on Netflix. I am literally going to eat my food and watch it tonight. Like after a nice bubble bath, I just watch all of Moesha until I fall asleep. And it's amazing. And you don't watch really for Moesha because she was trash. She always got on my nerves. But you watch for everyone else. And I think that's the whole point is like you get into the space of seeing what you consider stereotypically offensive to you for whatever reason, it's mainly because you don't understand, you've not familiarized yourself with it. So when right. people say things like they have not, oh, I haven't really gotten into Potomac or Atlanta, and they're like, but that doesn't make me a racist, does it? I'm like, actually, in a sense, it does. Because mm-hmm. what you're saying is because you can't identify with them, you can't watch them. And that's mm-hmm. simply not true unless you feel like you can't identify with an experience that isn't yours.
Right.
In which case, yeah, you do need to do some internal work right there. But if you surround yourself with things that are different than yours and kind of like I try to start my show off every once in a while with a song from all different types. I have done a Megan Thee Stallion song. I did Hot Girl Summer. People know that it was not invented by Miley Cyrus at all. Mm-hmm. Don't let her tell you any differently. I started it with Dan and Shay, country pop duo, mm-hmm. A Billie Eilish song. I love a good pop music bop, you know, because right. the pop girls also like to be a little vulgar and do some things. So I'm cool with that too. Mm-hmm. I love a good country song if it's from like newer contemporary country, like Kelsea Ballerini. And mm-hmm. I love trap music and hip hop music and R&B, and I'm a Beyonce Beehiver. So complexity, let's do it. Let's really open ourselves up to different things and see what we like. Play yes. other stations on the radio. See what's on over there. And those yes. are radio edits. So you have nothing to worry about. Boom.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So well said. No, but it is true. And I mean, like, obviously, like, especially these past few months, like me as a white girl, like looking at just the content that I've been interacting with was definitely a wake up call because it's not, yeah, I feel like once I mean, obviously I listened to you, I've listened to Bitches Better for a while, but like once I consciously was like, I need to be interacting with more content with Black voices behind them. Like it sounds so fucking stupid. And I apologize if I sound fucking stupid right now, but it is a fucking game changer. Like how much I can learn just exposing myself to Black voices in the Black experience. And it sounds so fucking obvious.
Yeah, I get it. And I think I would even challenge people to, I get it. Everyone wants to listen and learn, but now we're at a place where action needs to be taken.
Absolutely. Because
there were a lot of Black people who held their breath and some who didn't and dismissed it completely the day everybody was posting Black squares. Yes, of course, it's cute for you to post it because who wants to know that you're a fucking racist, you know?
Right.
Like who wants to actually actively be following someone who didn't post it because they're like, oh my God, they didn't say anything. They're probably racist. Oh my God. So obviously it's cute. And Stassi and Kristen are a clear sign of that. Like, because they had to post it and people were like, oh girl, come on.
Right.
But they had to, because what are they going to do? Not post it? Like, but so I held my breath, but also didn't. I was like, okay, I don't really see this going anywhere. And it's now just a nice little reference piece for later. But now I challenge people to like associate with more, even like Black Twitter accounts and Instagram. Like Black Twitter is a thing and it's an entity and it's powerful. And the reason why Black Twitter sold out the Popeye's chicken sandwich. That was not Twitter in general. It was Black Twitter. Mm-hmm. Period, point blank. Memes, GIFs, things like that. But also see the dialogue below those things. There is not one way. Even if you don't agree with something, look at other people's perspectives as well. And don't just go looking for the one that's the anti, that's closest to where you are. Like there are people who will be like, well, I found this one person who said everything different than all 75 of the other people. And I agree with that one. It's like, no, you don't go looking for that one. But look between the dialogue, even of other people who are Black, who do have different discussions, so that you can at least learn where your opposition should really come in and what it could look like. Because you don't want it to be like, you just have a difference of opinion because you don't know any better.
Right.
You want to have an informed opinion, but also make sure you are looking at what the differences are and make sure your opposition isn't coming from a place that isn't genuine, just your opinion that's different instead of, or and make sure it's not like a bias that's already active in your body and in who you are.
Right. Thank you. So, truly, thank you so much for having this conversation with me too. And obviously for all the emotional labor you do, just constantly educating me and all of your followers with both your podcast and your platform. Like I truly appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that I have a little bit more patience than a lot of people. I would definitely not go looking, you know, for everyone listening. I wouldn't go looking for everyone to do the same things that I do. But it's also one of the reasons that I have to take so much time off, because it is a lot of emotional labor when a lot of times I do want to just say to people, fucking Google it. Like it's not that hard. You can Google and then fill in the blank is what I'm always saying. So yes, though people will ask me like, so what did that person say, if you don't mind me asking? And it's like, well, I'm not going to like, you know, chew you out for like not for asking me, you know, if I'm okay with answering this question. And I get this might be harder to Google, but we could do some background work, right? Like look up the 400 years of oppression and bad things that have happened in this country and be like, oh, maybe that's why y'all are still mad. I think I get it.
Yes, like and literally. See, like,
what the dynamics are and stuff like that. And so it's not always going to be me. I get that it's because I have a lot of patience. I tell people, listen to lots, like throw in a lot of different content. Like you just said, on your social media and your podcast, like I listen to other Black podcasters. I listen to a lot of other white podcasters doing Bravo. It's all the same show. It's the same week every week, and I still listen to it. So it's not like you're going to get one and done, because that one person's experience and perception is not the same as someone else's. And that's the point, is that there's all different experiences. So we should treat them all differently. And we could still have like a, no one's looking to trick you. You don't have to go, well, that one was totally different. I don't know what the right answer is anymore, because she says it's fine and she says it's not fine. The point is, be mindful and know what you're dealing with and be thoughtful in your actions, especially when dealing with people of color, and know how they might be perceived. And just because you get lucky with the one friend who doesn't find what you did appropriate, you know, to be an appropriation, doesn't mean if you go out into the world, someone's not going to have a problem with it. And the point is, you just need to be aware of that. Period. Right. And if you go and you choose to go do it, be prepared for someone who might have an issue with it, and don't fight them on it because the other person told you it was cool. That's what it means to have different perspectives and to hear different people, so that you know, okay, so though this might not be, I didn't mean it to be offensive, and though they may have told me it's not offensive, I can maybe see how this might be offensive. So maybe I'll scale back on it.
Right. And then like
it's taking that sample.
And yes, and taking the feedback, like, and then not doing it again, or like taking it as a learning opportunity and then correcting moving forward. Like that's like the fact is like I as a white person am gonna make mistakes. Like, and there's room for that, but there has to be like a conscious effort to learn and be better and better and correct moving forward. Right.
Because let me tell you something, white fragility is the only kind of fragility that's accepted. Mm-hmm. So people saying, that's not my intention, and I just find it really offensive that you would think that about me because I was not, and I do this and I do that. Honey, calm down. Like, you're really being fragile at this point. And you're now saying that your intentions means more than my feelings.
Right.
And somehow I'm not supposed to respond with however I feel because what do you want me to do? Be less mad? Like, I had a great discussion with Sasha from the Bravo Breakdown on my podcast about Sutton's comments on Beverly Hills about the kitchen and how Garcelle in that moment did not seem to have an offense to it. And people are like, well, she didn't get upset. A, she's doing her job. B, she's the only Black person on this cast. C, she has to pick her battles because she's the only Black person on this cast. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't always get the opportunity to do it. Not to mention, she's constantly on white spaces. She's in Beverly Hills or whatever. Mm-hmm. Her, she has a lot of people around her that do not look like her, but she also has an outlet of people who do look like her. So she gets to pick her battles, and that's fine. And no one's going to tell her how to feel about this. The point was, I didn't necessarily have an offense to it. I was more so like, oh, okay, we're having a kitchen conversation on Beverly Hills. This will be fun. So now I'm like, okay, the 3 million people that watch this show are now going to go running out. And all those white women are going to be like, oh, my kitchen is this. And I'm like, no, that's not it.
Yes.
That's not it. And so Sasha had an immediate offense to it. And she explained it to me on my show. We had a very difference of feeling about it. But I was able to be like, you know what? I actually see what you're saying and how that could be dangerous. And I understand that. My hair doesn't do the same things as someone else's. It doesn't do, even as a Black woman, my hair is not like Sasha's. So the offense that she could take absolutely can mean a difference for her, because I do have very vivid memories of my kitchen needing to be tamed deeper. And for a lot of girls who are trying to associate themselves with a Eurocentric form of beauty, getting that kitchen for your parents so that your parents felt like you could get a job or you could be presentable meant literally pressing the shit out of the back, tiny, tiny, tiny little naps and little curls at the back of your neck with a hot, hot comb. Like, it's literally a ceramic comb that you put on the stove. Like, it's a hot comb. And you get up there, there were burns involved and different things. And all of that was at the expense of our pain and comfort to try to look presentable to what white society thought. So it doesn't really matter if Sutton feels or her intention wasn't that. It doesn't even matter that she even found it funny. And it doesn't even matter that I laughed. The point is, someone else may not have. And it's up to someone like Sutton to be like, okay, though I didn't mean it offensively, I could see how that would upset you. And I, or now I do see why that upsets you. And even if it, if I didn't see it, it did upset you. I'm sorry.
Yes, like,
that's
exactly
all it takes. Instead, you see, well, that wasn't my intention. So it didn't upset Garcelle in the moment. And I have a lot of my friends who said this was okay. And it's just like, it really hurts me that you would think this about me. And now that's white fragility.
Right.
And that's not accepted in any other group. No other group would that be a thing. Like for Kevin Hart, when he was, you know, decided he wanted to get, you know, be homophobic and not apologize for his tweets from the past, the Oscars dropped him and they asked him to do an apology. And he was like, no, I won't. And people were like, well, then you got to cut. Goodbye. And it wasn't the best. And it was, you know, there was a lot of criticism on it. And I think it's all valid. But that with them saying the response would not have been allowed to be the same. His intentions did not matter to people that were hurt, because their feelings were hurt. And they had every right to be. And if they see someone on their TVs that they think is a fun environment for them, which is the Oscars, they would like to know that it's not hosted by someone who feels that their feelings don't matter. Hello, that makes sense to me. And it's not being overly sensitive if you just listen. It's not sensitive to listen and to have a feeling. Because, like, if I call you an asshole and you like, well, that hurt my feelings, and I'm like, well, you're being sensitive, it doesn't stop the fact that you just felt bad that I called you an asshole.
Exactly. Like, feelings were still at play, and those are valid and real feelings for the person experiencing them.
I do a lot of oversimplifications on my podcast and in real life, on my Instagram, to kind of make people understand it doesn't have to be as complicated as you make it, honey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you say, okay, pumpkin. Yes. Okay, pumpkin. Yes, pumpkins.
Yes. They're like, I'm here for a pumpkin. I'm like, listen, I got to end it sweetly.
Yeah.
Because I love everyone. And I do feel strongly as a teacher, my perspective is everyone can grow and learn should they choose to. And I think that part is the most important.
Yes, you have to want to. I consider myself a mixologist and a pumpkin. And I just, yes, I appreciate all of your posts always. And I want to ask you as my last question, what is something considered aspirational that you don't have yet, but you want to have?
Oh, that I want to have?
Yeah.
Okay. This is so, people are going to be like, what? It's not, I could say certain cars and things, but I told the person that I'm in a relationship with that we will never stop moving houses until I have a pot filler.
Wait, a what? Oh, a pot filler. That's so good.
It is it's like a bar, like a bending bar pole thing that comes out of your wall, over your stove, under your range.
Yes.
That you turn the knob and it fills the pot. So you do not have to fill a bunch of measuring cups. You don't have to travel back and forth with the pot and the water. I just want a pot filler. And then I know I've arrived.
That is a truly fantastic answer. And I never would have thought of it, but that's so true. Like, I feel like the most aspirational homes all have a pot filler.
It's like an extra fucking piece of plumbing. Like, nobody needs that. And it's spending more money on it. And that's the point.
But
it's truly something that I aspire to because it means it's like less work. I mean, you get to enjoy your home more. It means something to me. I think the aspirational things should be something that kind of like solve a problem for you or like make you feel better about the problems that you do have. And all the labor we do in the world, people, all the work we do that's hard, and me being a teacher in the summer times when I want to make some pasta salad, I would really like to be able to boil my water quicker by having the stove on and the water just go directly into it.
Yes, I so agree. I feel like the most aspirational things are the things that like make your life a little bit easier. It's like one less inconvenience that you have as you tackle like life's bigger problems.
Right. Or at least makes your life more enjoyable while it's like a Birkin. I'm aspiring to it. It don't solve shit for me. Like I have plenty of purses, but I want it because it'll make my life feel better.
Yes.
The bad things that happen, just look at the person like, yay. Now I get to go when I'm like working. I'm like, oh, I can go home. I can make my tortellini because I got a pot filler and it's easier.
I love that answer. Wow. It's incredible. Mani, truly thank you so much for being here. It was such a joy. Thank you so much for like all your insightful answers and feedback. And just like, thank you so much for doing this.
I'm so happy that you asked me. We'll see how people like it.
No.
I'm always so unfiltered. So it makes me feel like, oh God, people are going to be like, who did you have? Why did you? And she came at me and I, but listen, if you like to think, if you like, you know, I like to approach Housewives and Bravo in general with a very thoughtful perspective while still being very shady, never hatey, but fun, but holding people to a standard, you know? And I do it to myself. I like to be very thoughtful in my approaches, even if it is the extra work, because it just means someone else feels safer living in the world with me. And that's cool. So if you're into that, I assume where we were going with this is where can people find me?
A professional. You know where it's going.
You can find me anywhere you listen to Not Aspirational with Hannah Brown by looking up Mixing with Mani, MixingWithMani. Also that on Instagram and Twitter and even Facebook. I do have a Facebook page and a Facebook group called The Mixologist Mixer. So you're welcome to indulge in whatever tickles your fancy.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Y'all listen to Mixing with Mani, follow Mixing with Mani, join the Facebook group. How is that going, by the way? Cause it's pretty new, right? The Facebook group.
Yeah, it is pretty new. We're up to like almost like 60 members. It's such really
cute.
Posting their own things. I really enjoy when people post stuff and I'm like, yes, I don't have to start. Like I really, really love it. So I am having a great time. watching. It's really was because I wanted people to be able to see it mm-hmm. and know that their voices should be heard to each other. Mm-hmm. The people who DM me are some of the funniest individuals I've ever seen. Like, they're mm-hmm. hilarious. They really get it. And a lot of times they either ask me the same questions or they tell me the same things. So mm-hmm. I really wanted them to have a space where they can kind of feed off of each other. Mm-hmm. So literally, if you just type in Mixing with Monty in the search bar, you can just hit groups or like scroll down and go find the group and you can join it. I will pretty much let anybody come in. I really want people to be able to kind of come together and hear each other and be like, and have a good time. Like, mm-hmm. spread the gossip. We already had some polls going. People got shady in it. They're like, wait a minute, what? Like, there was somebody posted a poll and there's nice tweets and posts and tea, you know, a lot of tea. Okay. So, you know, come on over to that side if you want to have some fun and get more involved with things that really have nothing to do with this.
Oh my gosh. Amazing. Y'all join the Facebook group. Check out Mixing with Monty. Monty, thank you so much again for being here. You're the best.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we'll see y'all soon. Bye.